Of Possibility, written and read by the Oscar Cat. A Boa vs. Python, Thought Crimes Crossover, written for Yin again for her birthday in 2007. They fucked in the lab when an experiment ran over, and it almost made more sense just to sleep on the battered couch in the coffee room than attempt to drive home. But time was of the essence, and Brendan was expected back in New York in 15 hours. He arrived after dark, bearing takeout and a tub of coffee ice cream that was slowly turning the paper bag transparent. He wandered around the labs, listening to Emmett's day and peering into the cages and tanks, his hands deep in his pockets, while Emmett piled up papers and made space on his desk for the food. He twirled a chopstick in his fingers as he talked, then grabbed up its mate, repositioned them, and Emmett tried hard not to stare as Brendan picked at a container of rice. He wrapped his fingers around the ridges in the outer door to Betty's enclosure, almost trembled as Emmett traced the ridge of his hip with the fingers of one hand, the thumb of the other, a wide, slick constant full of promises. Emmett first met Brendan in a bar, even though those things never really happen. He'd noticed him, striking and rumpled, picking at the label of his imported beer. For the next hour or so, he felt like every time Emmett looked up, he was looking his way for just a fraction of a second, before his attention flicked back to the dark-haired woman he was with. Emmett had thought nothing of it. Okay, not true. He'd thought, yes, and settled back in his chair, but assumed nothing, until the woman tapped him on the shoulder and said, "This is Brendan." Smiled sweetly at Brendan's scowl, and then left. At the time, Emmett had just assumed Freya had the same knowing powers as most women he knew. You didn't need to be a mind reader to guess that Brendan was interested. Despite such an unexpected introduction, conversation had come easily, and there had been more rounds and small smiles traded back and forth as they tried to get the barman's attention. Emmett knows now that Brendan, of course, remembers it all in full technicolor, but when he looks back, his own strongest memory is of the attraction, the want, that attached itself to his pulse, a constant buzz over and above that of their drinks. It wasn't surprising, then, that before the night was out, he'd let himself be pushed back against the wall 3 side streets away from the bar, curled his fingers around Brendan's loose black tie, and shifted his legs apart, making room. He felt as well as heard when Brendan chuckled against the corner of his mouth, tremors against his skin. Long fingers brushed tickled into the hair at the nape of his neck, and he nipped at Brendan's full bottom lip, tasting the remains of bar smoke and lingering alcohol. Stilted and tentative emails gave way to stupid and funny emails that made Emmett snigger into his morning coffee. In time, they slipped further into a familiar pattern of weekend flights and dozens of tiny lifelines that he wouldn't catalogue, couldn't name. His research was coming together, and he couldn't put his finger on when that had stopped being enough. Papers started to get published. Emmett found 2 of them, dog-eared and coffee-ringed, in Brendan's desk drawer while being sent to hunt for batteries, and the slow trickle of grants became a torrent, and then a roar, so that bills actually got paid, and Emmett woke up 37 and a boss to almost 12 postdocs and research assistants. Brendan started addressing all emails to the man, like he wasn't himself living the life of an authority figure, regardless of the huge amount of downloaded TV and music that may or may not have found its way onto his hard drive. Brookhaven called the same day Brendan got shot in the gut, and Emmett rode this latest roller coaster on adrenaline and caffeine, poised to move at the drop of a hat, but frozen, impotent, waiting for news. The words, "so close," replayed over and over in his head, alternating between being a question and a prayer, a hope and a failure that felt all too familiar, long carved into his bones like the scars of initials on a tree. He refused any calls that weren't Freya, or, God, Harper, because he just couldn't, and solidified a reputation for being in demand, of exclusivity. But how the hell could he talk business when all his plans pointed east, when all his plans were bleeding away? He ended up locking himself in the anteroom of Betty's cage, barely aware that her smooth red forehead rested on the other side of the glass partition he was slumped against. He chewed at the skin around his nails until the fingers were pink and burning, until Freya, finally and thank God, brought news and a location, a prognosis, all wrapped up in a trembling voice trying hard to sound calm. Brendan had a close call, a wicked scar, a 3-week hospital stay, and a 4-month convalescence. He spent most of it on Emmett's couch, talking to Freya by phone and reading case notes on his laptop. His success rate barely dipped. And after all that, it really wasn't that hard to up sticks, and computers, and numerous delicate one-of-a-kind pieces of equipment, and dozens of standard-sized vivariums, deadly snakes, not deadly snakes, thousands of carefully stored samples and countless cages and rodents, and move. If you ignored the basic practicalities of moving a giant snake across the country without it escaping or being shot at, neither of which thankfully happened. Betty got a bigger terrarium, an entire floor of the building, minus the usual 2-layer safety entrance. And Emmett got lots of invites to speak at conferences. He worked hard on trying not to notice that half the people clamouring to see him were the same ones who'd been scoffing and rejecting his applications back when it was all just theory. During the inaugural meet and greet, aka free booze, weird cream-filled canapes and backbiting, 3 beers in, Emmett watched Brendan roll his eyes as they both listened to Macmillan from Yale talk about his latest splicing and sequencing. He could feel a thumb stroking back and forth along the length of his palm, curling his toes and making him hard. But Brendan merely nodded in all the right places and sucked at the foam on the top of his beer. Later the next day, slightly sore-headed, and missing a good 5 hours' sleep, Emmett presented a talk about the benefits and ethics of biological harvesting. And perhaps he stumbled, paused, slightly halfway through. No one noticed, and no one looked round to see Brendan, slightly frazzled and subway damp, slip through the auditorium doors and fold himself into the back row. Emmett smiled, smoothly picked up his place, and carried on.